You're listening to Daily Paul Radio. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.
Welcome to Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious. This is me, Robin Kerner, the original Blue Republican. And I have a guest with me today from sunny California, where I was just a couple of weekends ago, largely thanks to my guest, who is the incoming chairwoman of the Libertarian Party of Sacramento. And the reason I am having her on this show is because she is also, I am delighted to say, the Blue Republican Radio Show's first official advertiser, Cindy Biondi Gobrecht. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Robin. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. And also, I should say, Cindy, another reason I am pleased to have you here is I think you're one of my biggest fans, and I appreciate all the publicity that you helped me get by reposting Blue Republican stuff, and I appreciate all the support that you give me personally and also Blue Republican and what we stand for.
Well, you're more than welcome. I believe in your message, and I want to share it with everybody I know and everybody I don't know. So I'm happy to spread the word.
Well, thank you so much. And talking about spreading messages, I think that is a nice segue right into what we want to talk about, which is, well, the book that you are advertising, but also the kind of the context of that book. And the thing that I really want to speak about with you is a topic that I think affects all of us in the liberty movement in some way and is very... kind of looms very large to me as someone coming from a very secular and irreligious country. I'm British. And religion plays, I would say, a negligible part in British politics. That, of course, is not true in the United States, where religion informs politics in many ways. Indeed, it's been said that unless you profess a certain range of religious views, it's impossible to be president. I don't know whether that's true, but certainly a strong case has been made. Now, I'm interested to speak to you because you've had an interesting journey. We've spoken about this before, Cindy, and I would like you to share with your listeners your political journey as it's informed by your religious faith. You are a Christian and you are a libertarian, both a small L libertarian and a big L libertarian. But before you were a big L libertarian, you were a big R Republican. Am I right?
Yes, that's correct. Very strong Republican for most of my life, and I won't tell you how many years that's been.
But is it fair to say most of your politically active life then, I guess by definition, you were a staunch Republican?
Yes, absolutely.
And of course, most people, when they think about religion in politics, they do think about the Republican Party. They think about the social conservatism of the Republican Party. But I think you told me, Cindy, not long ago, that your religious faith was what actually forced you, i.e. your conscience, to have you leave the Republican Party. Tell us about that.
Well, I just didn't like the way that I, as a Christian, was being portrayed by the Republican Party. I feel that there is a wrong interpretation of who Jesus Christ is and what the Bible says about him and what we as his followers are to be in the world. And we're not to be hate mongers and war mongers, and we're not to disparage people that don't share our faith. We're supposed to be embracing and loving.
So,
and I did not want to be associated with that.
So obviously by implication, you would say that the flavor, the approach of the Republican Party, in your experience from the inside, was the opposite of that, was excluding and non-embracing.
Yes, or how it was portrayed in the media. I'm not going to say that all of my fellow Republicans felt that way. In fact, I feel that they, for the most part, don't feel that way. I was involved with a very large church in South Carolina that had over 10,000 members, and I would say probably the majority were Republicans, but none of them held that very narrow view of Christianity that was being portrayed in the media and by the political figures of the Republican Party.
Now, so this raises a really interesting question, Cindy. If that is the case, if the, let's say, the bulk of the membership of that party is not excluding, then why is it that the party itself, A, is portrayed that way, but B, sufficiently acts that way such that you felt you had to leave?
Because I felt that they were creating an atmosphere that was actually making me a target as a Christian. And of a certain malign attitude.
Why were you targeted?
So that's what I felt. I felt that because of the way that they were portrayed, that was putting me in a position of people being intolerant of me.
Now, presumably there were some issues around that, around which that intolerance coalesced.
What issues?
Yeah, well, there's got to be some basis for this. What was it?
Obviously, the marriage rights issue is a big one.
Okay.
And that's probably, and that everything that goes along with that, the gay rights movement altogether, that made it appear that I hated these people, and that's not who I am. That doesn't represent me, and putting me in a category of being a Republican who hates gays is not who I wanted to be in the world.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So I didn't want to be a part of that anymore. And I didn't want to, and their policies too, because as we've discussed, there is this corporate cronyism that goes along with the Republican Party, where I feel that one of the reasons I was initially involved with the Republican Party is because my father was a businessman, and the Republican Party traditionally was pro-business, but not just pro-corporate business, but small business. It laws were initiated to help improve the lives of entrepreneurs and to promote the growth of small business, but it isn't that anymore. So that's a problem too. And then the social issues were a big one for me.
Okay.
And I also felt that because of the way that we were being perceived as Christians, that we were setting ourselves up for some serious repercussions that could ultimately limit my religious freedom.
Now, that's interesting. Can you talk more on that? But like what?
Well, for instance, let's say, you know, there are these laws that are being proposed, these bullying laws, anti-bullying laws, okay? So if I'm perceived to be a Christian who hates gays, then I could be a target for a bullying law that could ultimately inhibit my ability to worship Christ. Like, for instance, they could say, okay, you can't read the Bible anymore because there are certain verses in the Bible that we believe are bullying to the LGBT community.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
And there's actually, I've heard of precedent, I believe in Canada, where they do have these anti-bullying laws, and they're actually shutting the mouths of preachers, that they're not allowed to preach certain things from the pulpit because it's perceived as bullying to the LGBT community.
So what you're saying, Cindy, is that the portrayal of Republicans is going to result in a kind, potentially, in a kind of legal governmental backlash that will end up limiting them to express the very views that they may have. In other words, the way they're expressing their views now and the way they're being portrayed is going to end up being counterproductive.
Yeah, absolutely. They could lose all their religious freedom because they're trying to beat people up with their religious freedom now.
Very interesting. All right, Cindy, thank you. Look, this is good timing. We're coming to the end of our first segment, and we will come back soon, and I will be asking you about your book. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio, where I am talking to Cindy Biondi Gobrecht about a rather interesting topic that I haven't broached before on air, the intersection between faith, religion, on the one hand, and party politics on the other. Now, Cindy, what you just said, if I can summarize, and correct me if I in any way misportray what you said, you left the Republican Party because you are concerned that the portrayal of Republicans, and indeed religious Republicans, as bullying will result potentially in a political outcome that will work against their very values. Fair enough?
Yes.
Okay.
I agree. Yes.
Yeah, so here's the question I've got to ask now. Is the problem essentially one of the way good people are being portrayed, or is the problem that there actually is a hardcore of bullying Republicans that are being fairly portrayed but are kind of the bad apples that are ruining the box of apples for everybody?
Well, the bad apples are the politicians. And if that's who you're voting for, then you don't want to vote for them. Because the politicians are portraying a wrong interpretation of Christianity.
But the fact here, Cindy, is that they keep getting reelected, surely, because there are enough Republicans, just the membership, the public, who actually do agree with that portrayal of their religion and their religious views. Otherwise, wouldn't be there.
I would disagree with that. I would. I believe that there hasn't been enough alternative for America that, you know, as we say, the Democrats are kind of two sides of one coin. So that's the problem. The problem is that there is not a viable enough alternative. And that's what I'm trying to do through the Libertarian Party, is to make the Libertarian Party viable enough that people will have an alternative. And the alternative really speaks to the heart of the majority of Americans, because I don't believe either party is really representing the heart of America, in my opinion.
I'm going to ask you in a minute about your experience now as a relatively new member of the Libertarian Party, and indeed the incoming chairwoman of quite an important chapter of the Libertarian Party over down there in Sacramento, which is kind of like the belly of the belly of the beast, Sacramento, California. I mean, you know, you're really taking it on. But I just want to make sure I understand this. So, yeah, you're going to say something?
Yeah, the left coast, as we say.
Exactly, the left coast, the very left coast. Yeah, yeah. If you're saying the Republican Party keep generating these candidates because there aren't viable alternatives, how can there not be viable alternatives if the membership are not being fairly reflected by those politicians? I mean, if these kind of bullying views are those held or portrayed by the Republican politicians, why aren't the memberships choosing other people in primaries, etc.? You know, just, you know, pushing forward other candidates that better suit their views.
Well, there are some really good Republicans out there, and so I shouldn't throw everybody into the heap. Okay, it's a generalization.
Sure.
that got me frustrated, and you know, made me just really not want to be associated with the Republican Party. And also, the war issue too is very close to my heart. I have a daughter that's a Marine.
Mm-hmm.
And so when, you know, Bush put us into the Iraqi war, that was horrendous to me. And,
okay.
And so that again, it has to do with policy by the hierarchy of the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
But there are some shining stars in the Republican Party. I believe Tim Scott, who is the first black senator in the state of South Carolina, is a proponent of the kind of values that I have as a Christian, as American, and I think he's wonderful. I also think there are some really cool Republican governors. The governor of Louisiana, I think, is doing a lot for that state too. He's a Republican. So there, it's not the whole barrel that's bad, as you would say.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
But unfortunately, there's like 80% of the barrel that's bad, and there's a few shining stars.
No, I understand.
So that's why I just sort of felt, for me personally, I needed to be a part of a party that embraced all of my beliefs and not just part of my beliefs.
Now, you said you were horrified when we went into Iraq. Did you feel alienated then? Because obviously the Republicans were rah-rah for that when it started. If you were a Republican who was not, then you really must have stuck out like a sore thumb.
Well, and once again, I say I feel that it's just, again, it's a portrayal of the media that's incorrect. That everybody in the Republican Party totally agrees to every policy that's put out by their politicians. I don't think that's true, because I think most of my friends in my Christian circle agreed with me that we had no right going in there.
Okay, so let's move over to let's kind of follow you, as it were, to the Libertarian Party. Now, you haven't been a Libertarian for long, right? Did you tell me 6 months?
It's been a year now.
A year now. Okay, and how have you found that experience? It's a question of interest to me, because I see the Libertarian Party has attracts, one might say, a disproportionate number of atheists on the one hand, but then there is, I don't know if disproportionate, but certainly a solid cadre of Christians in the Libertarian Party. And from what I have seen, they seem to work really quite well together in the environment of the Libertarian Party. That, you know, the party does not seem to be divided by religion. Now, but then I'm not kind of in the inner workings of the LP in the way that you have been for a while. What's been your experience as a strong Christian in the Libertarian Party in California as well?
Well, I have a few of my friends that like to debate evolution with me, of course.
Okay.
So there are some issues, but I think the overall values and philosophies is what we embrace, and so how we live those out in our personal lives may be different, but a return to the constitutional values, which I believe the both Republican and the Democratic Party have gotten away from, is that that's on the forefront of our minds, and we want the freedom to be able to disagree.
Absolutely.
In America, because that's what America is about. America is about the freedom to be the individual that you are meant to be, and not to be hindered by laws that prevent you from your own personal beliefs and your own personal life.
Now,
in that respect, we're on the same page.
Absolutely. Now, Cindy, you have a blog, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Now, what are the themes that you tackle most on your blog?
I do tackle the Christian issue, but I tackle it from a libertarian perspective, because again, a lot of the things that are proposed by the Republicans and the Democrats are hindering to our freedom. And so I want to address the issue of freedom and basically what is the government's business about personal relationships anyway? That bothers me. It bothers me that there's laws that are constraining us in our personal relationships.
And one might say, therefore, from a Christian perspective, you're interfering with your relationship with God.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what, Cindy? We're going into another break. We'll be back soon.
Okay.
Hey y'all, Scott here. So you made a little bit of money in this horrid economy only to find that the Fed has more or less outlawed saving. So into the treacherous waters of the stock market bubble you go. But how to make a little money without too much risk of losing it all? Check out WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who opens a very real window into his main account, updating his subscribers on the facts of and the reasoning behind all his market moves. Follow along on paper or with real money and see what happens at WallStreetWindow.com.
Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious, and I'm speaking to Cindy Biondi Gobrecht. No, I keep saying that wrong, don't I, Cindy? Gobrecht. It's the emphasis. I got to get that right. And as I said at the top of the show, Cindy is an author, and we haven't yet talked about her book. So now in the second half of the show, it's time to talk about her book. Now, Cindy's book is called Blessed Are They, or Blessed, I suppose. Blessed Are They That Hunger. What's the book about, Cindy?
Well, it's an outreach to Hunger Games fans, basically. I wanted to reach out to them because Hunger Games is a really dark story, and it made me believe that today's teens and young adults have a pretty dark view of the world, the fact that they really like this really dark story. So I wanted to give them hope, and I do that in the form of maybe helping them be a little bit more active in terms of that there's a possibility of a return to a world, an America that's freer, and also to give them some hope in my faith, too, that perhaps in through a faith in Christ that they could have hope for their lives today. because they were born into it. And so they don't realize, for instance, my life was freer, having lived a few years. And I know that I was raised in a freer America than my daughter is in now as a young adult. And so they don't even know what they're missing, basically.
Wow.
So I write about that. I write about where we've come from and what we had, and that we can get that back again if we become engaged in the political process. That we still have rights. We still have a constitution, and that we as citizens have rights to have a representative government that really represents us and doesn't just bowl us over with their power. So that's what I'm trying to do in my book. I'm trying to give hope to teenagers and young adults, and hopefully help activate them and not just accept the way America is a status quo, but be willing to take action to make it a better America.
Would you say, Cindy, your book is more explicitly Christian or more explicitly libertarian?
Well, probably, I mean, if you look at the content, there's an awful lot of Bible verses in it.
Okay.
So I would say it's probably, well, I don't know. In my mind, it's 50-50.
Right.
But there are a lot of Bible verses in it. So there, but the Bible verses are really libertarian Bible verses.
Oh, that was exactly what I was about to say next. That either-or proposition was, I would hope, for a Christian libertarian or a libertarian Christian, actually a both-and proposition. They're not exclusive at all, right?
No, they're not. They're not, yeah. I mean, I believe that Jesus was a libertarian. He was the greatest liberator in the history of the world. So, you know, he said that we were made to be free.
Mm.
So, you know, he said, if the Son sets you free, you are free indeed. And that was what he came to do. He came to free us. And we were born to be free. And that's why in our Constitution, it's an inalienable right, because it's what God gave us.
Right, we wouldn't be in the image of God if we were not free, would we?
Absolutely.
Now, this is something you've done before, Cindy, written a book like this, where you're basically kind of kicking off from, inspired by something that's caught the imagination in the popular culture. You wrote a book earlier that was inspired by the Twilight Saga, right?
Yes, that's right. That was really what sent me off into the abyss of writing.
Okay. Okay.
So I've always liked writing. I actually wanted to be a journalist. That was supposed to be my major in college, and then I ended up being switching. I had a writing degree initially, then I switched to linguistics because I got interested in becoming a Bible translator for Wycliffe Bible Translators. That was really where I headed career-wise, yeah.
Out of interest, Cindy, from and to which languages?
From unwritten languages, like tribal languages.
Interesting.
So creating a written language for tribal languages that were unwritten, and then translating the Bible into their newly formed written language.
Wow.
So that was really the goal that I had for my life. And then the person I was married to no longer espoused the Christian values that I did, so that really wasn't going to work for us.
Mm-hmm.
We're not missionaries anymore. So that sort of ended. And but I always had the dream of writing in the back of my mind, but then you get busy. You know, I was raising my child, and then I was busy building a business, and writing was always something I thought I would do once I retired.
Okay.
And then I really got enthralled with the whole Twilight frenzy. And again, it was sort of the same, the way I talk about the young adults and my fascination with their obsession with the Hunger Games books is sort of the way I felt about the Twilight books too. I was really fascinated with that there were 100 million fans worldwide for these books. And I actually, once I read them, once I saw the movies, I personally resonated with them too. And so I understood that obsession, but I also felt that, again, it was a hungering for something that they could find through faith in Christ. And so it was my way of, again, introducing them to Christianity and the values of Christianity that they were searching for through this love story of the Twilight Saga. And then I also incorporated my own life into it as well, sort of how I've tried to live out the values that the Twilight characters had.
I should say, I don't know anything about either of these stories. You know that, Cindy.
I do. It's not your cup of tea, so to speak.
Well, you know, I'm one of the worst read, supposedly educated people I know. I've always gone for nonfiction. You know, time is limited. Reading takes effort. So if I was gonna be spending time doing something that takes effort, I'd always want to be learning stuff about my world. But I guess that might also be why I ended up, you know, being a scientist.
Yeah.
But that's why we need people like you.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their interests, right?
Absolutely.
And then I sort of use that as a springboard, too, in my blogging. I write about popular culture, too. I also think part of my fascination with understanding these social groups and popular culture comes from my background in anthropology, too. So I sort of see myself as an anthropologist as I'm studying culture in the world and culture in America. And you know, I'm fascinated with what draws people to certain things that are in arts and entertainment. So in my blog, I write about certain TV shows like Breaking Bad, and you know, where's the moral lesson in Breaking Bad, for instance? And I did write a blog recently about The Walking Dead, that I believe anarchy is utopia for adults, whereas the dystopic totalitarian world of like the Hunger Games and Divergent are the utopia for young adults. So
you said utopia. Do you mean dystopia?
Well, no. Anarchy is utopia for.
But The Walking Dead. We're talking about The Walking Dead, right?
Yeah.
But is that? I mean, again, this is out of my field, but I'm sure I've seen that on the TV, you know, like in the other side of the room. And isn't it like zombies? And it doesn't look very much like a utopia I'd want to live in.
Right. Yeah. But the fact that people love this, they're fascinated by it. They love this world, this anarchic world where there's no rules, there's no laws.
That's interesting. So you think people watch that and they're more into the lack of rules than they are scared of the zombies.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's
and they do create, at a certain point in the storyline, there is sort of this utopia when they're behind the walls, away from the zombies, but there's no leader. And as you go through it, as they develop leaders, the culture actually disintegrates. So a world with no governing rules and laws is actually a better world. And as soon as you start instituting laws and instituting a hierarchy and a leadership, then the world disintegrates. And then at the end of The Walking Dead, there's actually cannibalism going on among the non-zombies. So Anyway, you got to read my blog.
Really. Well, I post, you know, some of them that I do relate to. I do post on Blue Republican, and I'm pleased to do it.
Right.
Would you say?
Go ahead. You've never been too interested in any of the ones that relate to popular culture, but you like the ones where I'm actually commenting on political issues and.
Yeah, probably guilty. Yeah, probably
guilty.
So I've got a couple of questions. First question, maybe a one-word answer. So do you see yourself as an anarchist ideologically then, Cindy?
I took the test. I'm a minarchist.
Okay. All right. So you don't believe that the utopic state is would be anarchy then, or do you?
No, I believe that.
I see. Right. Okay.
I'm just saying that this is my interpretation of why a lot of my generation really loves The Walking Dead. Young people do too, but young people are more obsessed with this totalitarian regime, where of course there is revolution and they do make changes. But for some reason, their focus is more of that, whereas definitely Walking Dead is really this anarchy society. So
it's just my
opinion.
No, I mean, no, it's a very interesting one. And actually, I should say, I am actually very interested in popular culture in some ways. But of course, it's different parts of popular culture resonate with different people, I guess. And I think I'm interested in it in as much as I'm interested in social history, and probably in as much as that relates to, you know, politics, because all of these things are, of course, related. As someone who is interested in popular culture, Cindy, I wasn't thinking of asking you this, but it's and also your anthropological bent, which I think I share. You and I had the pleasure this weekend of being at the Libertarian Party of Washington State annual conference, and one of the speakers there was Chris Novoselic, formerly of Nirvana. Lovely guy. And I've just been kind of thinking today, what must it be like to have had that kind of an impact on, it was really my generation. When I was a teenager, the most important bands and the ones that I could always hear being played somewhere at school were Nirvana and Guns N' Roses. And and there he is now, Chris, involved in Fair Vote, getting directly involved in politics and representation, involved in a meta way in politics, you know, not party politics, but, you know, how the system kind of sends us in one way or another. Lovely, unassuming guy, smart guy, really enjoyed talking with him. I don't want to say disjointedness, but I was trying to imagine what it must have been like to have been such an icon and had such an impact on the culture as, you know, the basis for one of the biggest bands in my lifetime. And then to be kind of engaged in a much more ordinary way. Did you have any thoughts about that? Kind of, it's almost hard to know how to relate to, I mean, not to him, he's very easy to relate to, lovely guy, as I said, but to his experience, you know, in the ways he's had to affect the culture. I mean, he's been in an astonishing position, hasn't he?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it just shows the complexity of human beings, really. Mm. I mean, I think people would find it probably interesting that I like Nirvana music. I'm supposedly this conservative Christian, and I like Metallica, so...
Who doesn't like Metallica? I mean, I like Nirvana too, but yes, absolutely. Interesting.
So I think that really that we are so multidimensional as beings, and again, one other reason why freedom is so important for us, so that we really can fully express ourselves as human beings. And not
absolutely fit
into any kind of a mold or a peg, or I hope that we can continue to surprise each other and not always fit some description of who we are meant to be. So I that's the way I look at it.
You know what?
There's obvious, and a lot of times too, people that are performers are, especially musicians, because in order to be a really good musician, you have to practice a lot.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's a very introverted thing,
yeah,
to practice an instrument hour after hour after hour. So you know, I sense that about him too, that he's probably very introverted, but, you know, he's a good musician and he's able to.
Cindy, we're coming out of the segment. We'll carry on next segment.
All right.
Thanks for being with me, Robin Kerner and Cindy Gobrecht, author of Blessed Are They That Hunger. Cindy, when I was a teenager, I remember everywhere I went, it was Nirvana and Guns N' Roses, and Nirvana really changed the culture that I lived in. They were grunge. And what is it that we, as libertarians, need to do to infuse our ideas into the popular culture so they can have the same large-scale impact on that culture that Nirvana did with grunge in the 90s? What do we need to do?
Well, I believe we just need to educate them. They just need to be aware of who we are and what our values are, because as soon as you mention that you're a libertarian, most people say, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then once they understand what we're about, what our philosophies are, we really are speaking to the heart of America. We are saying what everybody's thinking. We are doing what everybody else would like to do, and that's return our country to the freedom that we once had, and return it to constitutional values that it was built on, and allow us to have the freedom to live our lives the way that we want, and to really be able to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Absolutely.
Without government infringement.
And you know what? You don't have to know any history to want those things, because they are the truths, they are the rights that are self-evident. In the last half a minute, Cindy, please go ahead and plug your book. Tell us again the title of the book and how people can get hold of it.
It's Blessed Are They That Hunger, and it's by Cindy Biondi Gobrecht. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iTunes. I always forget about that. It's on iTunes because it's also an ebook form. Also, you can find out more about me on my blog, which is at wordpress.com. And it's Cindy Biondi Gobrecht at wordpress.com. So I'd love to have you read it and find out more about libertarianism and how it relates to the Bible, that they really fit well together.
Absolutely, they do. Thank you, Cindy. Thanks for being with me. And thank you to all my listeners, as always, for joining us for Blue Republican Radio. Have a good week.
Okay, thank you.
Talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.